William's Wonderful Plan. William noticed the caravan the first morning it appeared, and formed his plans at once for acquaintance with its owners. Caravans had a peculiar fascination for William. He had always found, in caravan dwellers, whether of gypsy or bohemian persuasion, a pleasing freedom from the conventions and prejudices of regular householders. Immediately after school, he made his way down to the caravan and hung about it. He could see a man in the next field seated at an easel, painting. William was just about to draw closer to the caravan when a little girl appeared suddenly in the doorway. She was about William's age, with a round, dimpled face and dark curls. "What are you doing there, boy?" said the little girl in a clear voice. "Come and help me wash up." Impressed, despite himself, by the imperiousness of the little girl's voice, William managed to preserve his manly independence so far as to reply, with a swaggering laugh, "You needn't try bossing me, 'cause I'm jolly well not going to be bossed by any old girl." But even as he said it, he was turning to make his way meekly to the caravan, and within a few minutes was engaged in washing up and sweeping out the tiny room under the little girl's orders. She informed him, while he did so, that she'd had measles, and that this caravan holiday with her father was her final convalescence before she returned to school. "My father," she informed him, "is the greatest artist in the world. He can cook too, but he's very untidy." And she bustled about, dusting, tidying, putting away the tea things. She was certainly not William's ideal caravan dweller. On the other hand, her dimples were distinctly attractive, and William found her imperious manner intriguing. After that, he called there regularly. He had become the little girl's willing slave. The artist addressed him vaguely as boy whenever he met him, and seemed to feel no curiosity about him, never asking where he came from or what he was doing in the caravan. William had told no one about the caravan and its occupants, but he soon found that the news had spread through the village. Mrs. Bott, of the Hall, coming to invite William to a children's garden party, added, "And I'm going to ask that little girl who's camping here with her father. He's quite distinguished, I hear, an R.A. and all that." When Mrs. Bott had gone, William, who hated visits to the Hall, did his best to extricate himself from the festivity.
"I'm sure I shan't be well enough," he pleaded to his mother. "It's no good me going there with an illness coming on and giving it to everyone there."
"But you haven't got an illness, William," protested his mother.
"I didn't say I'd got one just this minute. I only said I felt I was going to have one that afternoon. I mean, it doesn't seem fair to people to say you'll go to a place when you know you're only going to give them all an illness.
If you think you're going to be ill, William, I'll ask the doctor to call." William beat a hasty retreat. To his surprise, the little girl actually wanted to go to the party.
"Don't be silly, William," she said. "Of course I want to go. It's a party. The only thing is..."
She sighed, and the sparkle died away from her face.
"Yes," said William. "I haven't got a proper party dress. I've just got an old muslin one, all washed out and ever so much too short. And all the others will have lovely dresses. I shan't enjoy it a bit."
"Well, don't go then," said William.
She stamped her small foot.
"Don't be silly. I tell you I want to go."
"Well, ask your father to get you a new dress."
"No, I won't. He's poor, and he's working hard, and he mustn't be worried. You see, the one I have does all right for school, but it'll look awful at a garden party because I know all the others will have nicer ones."
"Now, look here," said William impulsively. "Don't you worry. I'll see that you have a nice party dress for it."
He was aghast when he heard himself make this astounding offer, but it was too late to retract. Her face beamed with joy.
"Oh, William, will you really?"
He found her gratitude very pleasing.
"Of course I will," he said with a short laugh. "A little thing like that's nothing to me, nothing at all."
"But, William, you mustn't let anyone know you're getting it for me, will you? I should feel like a beggar if you did."
William gave another short laugh.
"Oh, no, of course I wouldn't do that. Oh, no, no, I'll get you a jolly nice new party dress, a jolly nice new one. No, you needn't worry about that."
The little girl beamed once more.
"Oh, William, you're wonderful."
"Mother," he said thoughtfully that evening, "I don't mind going to this party of Mrs. Bott's, if I can go in fancy dress."
"But of course you can't go in fancy dress, William," said his mother firmly. "It isn't a fancy dress party."
"Well, perhaps it is, and she forgot to say. Anyway, I think I ought to have a fancy dress ready, case it is.
But, William, what nonsense! And even if it is, you've got your Red Indian suit.
Oh, I'm sick of that old Red Indian suit. I want to go as a little girl. I want you to buy me a little girl's party dress, so that if we find it's fancy dress at the last minute, I can go in it."
"William, I can't think what's come over you."
"Nothing's come over me. Surely I can go to a fancy dress party as a little girl if I want to."
"But there is no fancy dress party," protested Mrs. Brown again.
"Well, will you give me a little girl's party dress and count it my Christmas present?"
"No, William, no. And I've no time to stay here talking nonsense with you like this. I've got the lunch to see to."
William decided to approach the 6-year-old Violet Elizabeth Bott, in whose honour the garden party was being held. He thought of the endless succession of elaborate frocks in which her small person made its appearance at all the local functions. She was, of course, much smaller than the little girl of the caravan, but surely, thought William, the little girl could make one dress for herself out of two of Violet Elizabeth's. He approached the hall cautiously and found Violet Elizabeth sitting on an upturned wheelbarrow.
"I'm a princess, William," she announced, "and you're my subject. You've got to bow when you speak to me."
Ordinarily, William would have ignored her, but to the lady's gratification and secret surprise, he bowed.
"Look here, Violet Elizabeth," he began. "I want to ask you something."
"You must say your Royal Highness when you speak to me,"
said Violet Elizabeth imperiously.
Your Royal Highness," muttered William. Now, look here. I want to ask you..."
Violet Elizabeth had leapt from the wheelbarrow.
"I want to go for a ride," she said. "Make my throne into a chariot."
William obediently turned over the wheelbarrow.
"Now, look here. What I want to ask you..."
"Now you're my coachman," said Violet Elizabeth,
reposing on the wheelbarrow and arranging her miniature skirt about her with dignity.
"Give me a ride, coachman."
Still forcing his proud spirit to this uncongenial servitude, William took up the handles of the wheelbarrow and began to push the small tyrant round the lawn.
Now, look here," he began again, rather breathlessly. "This is what I wanted to ask you."
"You must say your Royal Highness when you speak to me,"
said Violet Elizabeth.
"If you don't, I'll have your head chopped off for treason. And go faster."
"Your Royal Highness, this is what I wanted to ask you."
"I'm having a new frock from London for our party,"
announced Violet Elizabeth. It was a heaven-sent opening.
I say, you've got lots of party frocks, haven't you?"
"Hundreds and hundreds, and say your Royal Highness, or I'll have you arrested for treason."
Your Royal Highness, well, now, suppose there was another little girl..."
Violet Elizabeth's interest was suddenly aroused.
"Yes? Go on."
"Suppose there was another little girl that was invited to your party, but had only got a very old frock to come in. Wouldn't you want to give her some of your old party frocks so that she can have a nice one to come in?"
A seraphic smile appeared upon Violet Elizabeth's angel countenance.
"No, I wouldn't," she said. "I'd like her to come in an old frock, 'cause it would make my new frock seem smarter than ever."
There was only one thing to do, and William did it. He tipped the young autocrat ungently out of the wheelbarrow onto the lawn, then set off himself quickly down the drive. For a second, fury and amazement deprived Violet Elizabeth of the power of speech. Then it returned, and scream after shrill scream rent the peaceful summer morning. William was slowly approaching the caravan. He'd almost decided to admit failure, but when the little girl came running across the field to him, he couldn't find it in his heart to disappoint her.
"Oh, William," she cried excitedly, "have you got it?"
"Not yet," said William, trying rather unsuccessfully to assume an airy manner. "There's plenty of time."
"You have got a plan, haven't you, William?"
she said anxiously.
He laughed a carefree laugh that rang slightly hollow. "Of course I have. I should jolly well think I've got a plan, all right."
They reached the caravan, and he followed her into it. A much-washed white muslin dress lay over a chair. The little girl held it up.
"It looks awful,"
she said sorrowfully.
I'd rather go in it than not go at all, of course, but I shall feel dreadful if I have to wear it. It's all washed to bits, and it's miles too small. But you have promised to get me a new one, haven't you, William?
Oh, yes, said William, with a ghastly smile. Oh, yes, don't you worry about that.
And you really have got a plan?
Oh, yes. Yes, I've got a plan, all right.
The church clock struck five. She flung the dress over the chair again.
That's tea time. I'll go and fetch Father. Be an angel, William, and put on the kettle. The water's in the petrol tin, you know.
She ran off across the field, and William, heavy-hearted, lit the spirit lamp, as he'd seen the little girl do, and filled the kettle from the petrol tin. He'd often seen the little girl fill the kettle from the petrol tin, but he'd never realized that the caravan contained two petrol tins, one full of water, the other of paraffin. And it was from the paraffin tin that William filled the kettle. The next few moments were like the climax of a nightmare. As he placed the kettle on the spirit stand, a sheet of flame burst out, precipitating him through the caravan door and onto the grass outside. Through a whirligig of stars, he saw two men who happened to be passing leap into the caravan and fling their coats upon the bright sheet of flame. The flame died down. Through eddies of smoke, William, sitting with a blackened face and singed hair upon the grass, saw the scorched remnants of the little girl's dress, now about the size of a pocket handkerchief, still reposing on the chair. He gazed at it for a few moments, sprang to his feet, and fled from the scene of ruin. For the next few days he felt as if he were still living in a nightmare. He dare not revisit the little girl. His brain seemed to be numbed and stupefied by the immensity of the catastrophe. The day of the garden party arrived. He could think of nothing but the little girl deprived by his act of the party to which she'd been looking forward. She had said she would rather go in the old muslin dress than not go at all, and he had burnt the old muslin dress. He walked slowly and in a hangdog expression towards the hall. The little girl would not be at the party, of course, but suppose she was waiting outside to reproach him. He entered the gate and crossed over the lawn to a group of little boys and gaily dressed little girls. Suddenly he heard a cry of, "William!" And to his amazement he saw the little girl detach herself from the group and come across the lawn to him. She wore a very pretty and obviously new dress of pale pink.
"Oh, William," she was saying. "William, you are wonderful. Oh, William, thank you so much. It was so clever of you, and I'm so sorry that I didn't really believe you'd got a plan. And it was such a wonderful plan."
William was gazing at her, open-mouthed.
What?"
he demanded.
"Why, to burn my old dress so that the insurance people should give me a new one. They've given me a lovely new one, haven't they? Oh, William, it was so clever of you to think of it."
William recovered himself quickly. He assumed his easy swagger, smiling at her in affectionate condescension.
"Oh, that's all right," he said. "A little thing like that's nothing to me."